Happy Labor Day, although for millions of Americans, it's not so much. Unemployment is the topic of Republican presidential candidates out on the stump, also the focus of President Obama at a union rally today in Detroit, which is being seen as something of a dress rehearsal for his jobs address to Congress on Thursday. This weekend, Teamsters President Jim Hoffa gave notice of what he'd like to hear the president say on Thursday. He told CNN's Candy Crowley that he wants cash-rich corporate America, companies like Apple with $76 billion in its coffers, called on the carpet.
I think the president should challenge the patriotism of these American corporations that are sitting on the sidelines saying, why do we have high unemployment, but I'm not going to hire anybody?
Are you questioning the patriotism of Apple for sitting on money rather than hiring?
Yes, I am. What is it with a company that makes 76, and they sell most of their products here in the United States? I mean, they're the biggest Apple, you got Apple stores everywhere else. They get sitting on that kind of money, and every time they do something, they do it in China. They do it somewhere else.
We'll cover all the unemployment news as it happens this week, but on this Labor Day, a different look at work. An extended conversation with 83-year-old Philip Levine, just named the country's 18th poet laureate. Philip Levine began writing poems while working in Detroit's factories as a young man. His collection, What Work Is, won the National Book Award in 1991 and is selling again now. Here he reads the poem, What Work Is.
What work is. We stand in the rain in a long line, waiting at Fort Highland Park for work. You know what work is. If you're old enough to read this, you know what work is, although you may not do it. Forget you. This is about waiting, shifting from one foot to another, feeling the light rain falling like mist into your hair, blurring your vision. Until you think you see your own brother ahead of you, maybe 10 places. You rub your glasses with your fingers, and of course, it's someone else's brother. Narrower across the shoulders than yours, but with the same sad slouch, the grin that does not hide the stubbornness, the sad refusal to give in to rain, to the hours wasted waiting, to the knowledge that somewhere ahead, a man is waiting who will say, no, we're not hiring today, for any reason he wants. You love your brother. Now suddenly you can hardly stand the love flooding you for your brother, who's not beside you or behind or ahead, because he's home trying to sleep off a miserable night shift at Cadillac so he can get up before noon to study his German. Works 8 hours a night so he can sing Wagner, the opera you hate most, the worst music ever invented. How long has it been since you told him you loved him? Held his wide shoulders, opened your eyes wide and said those words, and maybe kissed his cheek? You've never done something so simple, so obvious. Not because you're too young or too dumb, not because you're jealous or even mean or incapable of crying in the presence of another man. No, just because you don't know what work is.
Poet laureate Philip Levine, who's been called the working man's poet, an urban poet, now ad poet laureate. And Philip Levine joins us from the Argo Studios in New York. Welcome and congratulations.
Thank you.
Can I just ask that poem? Did you know someone who worked at Cadillac while they also tried to train to sing Wagner?
No, actually, my brother was working to be a painter. But I don't know. I think I just had a special animosity to Wagner and wanted to stick that in there.
Yeah, but a dislike of the music, but a love of the man trying to make it work.
Absolutely.
And was your brother trying to be a fine arts painter?
Yes.
Well, let's learn a little bit more about why these characters resonated for you in real life. Born in Detroit in 1928, the son of Russian Jewish immigrants. You went to college and then, as we said, went to work at Cadillac, Chevrolet. We're feeling your brother's story seep into your poetry. But what else did you hear and see in those factories that called up poetry for you?
I would say, you know, in the early years when I was writing and working, I wrote nothing about the factory. Nothing. I'd come home and I usually worked nights, so I'd sleep, then I'd get up, and I'd have a lot of daytime light to work in to do what I wanted. But I was writing all kinds of poems, but I was not writing that. A doctor wouldn't write poems about his patients. I mean, he'd say, oh, God, that's shop. What the hell do I want to do that for? I mean, you look at William Carlos Williams' poetry. Most of his life he was a doctor. And there are not that many poems about doctoring.
Yeah.
I mean, I have many more poems about that life. But the irony is, of course, that I left that life at age 26 and then shifted slowly into academia, which left me a lot more time for writing.
Dwight Garner, writing in the New York Times, says, your work radiates a heat of a sort not often felt in today's poetry, that transmitted by grease, soil, factory light, cheap and honest food, sweat, low pay, cigarettes, and second shifts. It's a plain-spoken poetry ready-made. Seems ready for a time of S&P downgrades, double-dip recession, and debts left unpaid. I praise. On the other hand, there are some critics who ask, is it poetry or almost a form of journalism? One wrote, I think in the LA Times wrote, it's sort of the poetry of this is who I am and this is what happened to me. I'm looking at one, A Woman Waking. Yeah. It's a story about a woman remembering her father who used to light the stove and then measure the coffee, and then he would come and shake her awake, smelling of gasoline and whispering, then he left. That idea of telling a story, having me picture
no.
that?
No. No, that's not what it's about for everybody. It happens to be about that for me, but not only just that. We bring our own lives to poetry, and that's part of my life. And, when I was about, 19 or 20, at the time I was working at Detroit Transmission, I remember. And one day I'm walking out with a buddy I met on the line. He knows I write poetry. And I said to him, I made up this little story. Little did that inconspicuous assembly worker realize that someday he would place this magic into poetry that the world would love. I made up this BS, you know. And the guy said, are you serious about that, Phil? And I thought for a second and I said, yeah, it may not work out. I may not do it, but it's what I want to do. And here were these people. They were very different from me, many of them very different. But they extended themselves to me. They embraced me, sometimes physically, more often emotionally, mentally, what have you. And I embraced them. And I remember a line from Whitman, there is that lot of me, also luscious. And I remember when I read that, and I said, could that be true about me? And I thought, why the hell not? Why the hell not? And as I began to see myself in those terms, I began to see these people in those terms with their stories. And, you look at the history of English poetry. Are there stories in Keats? Yes. Are there stories in Shelley? Yes. In Byron? Yes. In Shakespeare? God, yes. Some of my favorite poems have stories. Some of them don't. Robert Frost is a fantastic storyteller. Why give up stories? At one time, that's what poetry was about. When Homer wrote his poems, it was about stories.
We heard your poem from the collection What Work Is, your 1991 collection, currently selling like crazy. Do you think that, obviously you've just been named Poet Laureate, but do you think, too, because of these times we're in, some people say there's a disconnect. There we're talking about jobs and we talk about unemployment, but nobody's coming along. No Woody Guthrie is coming along and singing a song about it. That there's some sort of disconnect between the arts and what's happening in the economy. Do you think that maybe your poetry is helping some people connect?
Yeah, dozens of them, literally dozens, reading my poems and connecting to this wonderful country. I honestly don't know. I get a lot of I get a lot of mail. And some of these letters are amazingly moving. Many years ago, for example, right after What Work Is came out, I was approached by the George Meany Labor Center in Washington, D.C. And they had gone to my publisher asking if they told my publisher, we're picking Levine's book for an annual prize, and we like to sell the books at a considerable discount to our members. And would you cooperate with that? Would you give the books for a 40 or whatever percent discount? And my publisher said no. The guy from the Labor Center approached me directly and wanted me to go and, you know, quibble with my publisher. And I said, no, wait a minute. I'll do it myself. I get the books for 40% off. And he said, oh, that's great. And will you sign the books? Yeah, I said, if people want them signed, I'd be happy to sign. And they sent me a whole raft of envelopes with the proper stamps on them. And I sold probably 50, 55 copies. But then the real reward came. The people who bought them wrote me. I had my return address on the envelopes that I mailed them in. And I got some of the most marvelous letters. And, you know, it was just...
What people
here
say?
I've been writing to an audience that I assumed wasn't reading me. But many of them were already reading me, and many of them became avid readers. And they were people from so many different walks of life. For example, there was a concert pianist, Rudolf Serkin. There was Pete Seeger wrote me, asked if he could use part of something for a song.
I love
Pete. Sure.
I love Pete Seeger. What's his name? Oh, yeah. The guy from the Weavers. Sure.
You know, a guy wrote me once about a particular poem that seemed to me almost indecipherable, right? I mean, I could understand it some of the time. And this guy writes me back and said he was so depressed, and he picked up this poem. It appeared in a magazine. And he said that particular poem so entranced him and so mystified him, and he found it so enticing that he searched for more of my work. And within a week, he said, my depression was kind of lifting. I saw other people had life even worse than I, poets especially. But I was so moved by it. I like to carry on correspondences with people I've never met. I find that very interesting.
Well, you may get some more now. What do you think about being Poet Laureate, being named? Were you surprised?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just came out of the blue. You know, at my age, 83, it seemed very surprising. Also, you know, I have a political past that might have been offensive to some people.
Which part are you talking about? We know you were fascinated by the Spanish Civil War, but what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm way over on the left, right? Mm-hmm.
But you are way over in the camp of the working man. And that's not that surprising that, if they can't supply jobs for the working man, at least give them poetry.
That's no way to look at it, my dear. They need a lot more than poetry.
Of course, they need jobs. It's Labor Day. We're having an extended conversation with new poet laureate Philip Levine. What's your favorite poetry about work? We'll have more about Phil Levine's coming up here and now. Welcome back. In a 1988 interview, poet Philip Levine gave a devastating analysis of modern poetry. There's a lot of snow, he said. A moose walks across the field. When people do show up, they're Volvo-driving suburban mannequins whose greatest terror is that they might, like their parents, furnish the house in knotty pine. Now 83, this former auto worker and teacher who writes about the blue-collar life is the new Poet Laureate. We have some more of his terrific readings at hereandnow.org. But Philip Levine, right before the break, you were saying there's only so much a poem can do to sustain people out of work.
I remember my brother saw a particular movie and told me to go see it. And I went to see it, and I didn't think much of it. And he called me and, what'd you think of it, Phil? And I said, I walked out on it. Why? I said, the movie theater was so cold and I didn't wear a jacket. And this movie was not good enough to let me forget that I was freezing. And he said he had a friend, the wonderful artist, Bob Thompson. He said, Bob Thompson said to me, great art will always transport you. It will always focus you. I said, first thing, it was a mediocre movie. Second thing, that's nonsense. You're sitting there with a toothache and you're going to be transfixed by great art. Get out of here.
So if you can't comfort the jobless, I mean, what do you think you can do as a poet laureate?
Well, I think one thing that poetry does, although most of us who write poetry probably don't sit down to intend to do this, and you could say this for literature, not just poetry, that people read it and they find out that other people, these authors or the body of characters in the book, who seem so radically different from them, are intensely human people, and they suffer as much as they suffer. The way The Grapes of Wrath would let you know? Mm-hmm. It's not a great novel, I don't think, because Steinbeck isn't much of a writer. Mm-hmm. But it's a great story, and the characters are vivid. And you read the book and you say, oh, my God, how can we let our country do this to these people? And I would think the same thing could happen today. People would read the right books. They would say, you know, they're actually human beings living in Cuba. Think of it. They're like us. They want to give things to their kids. They want their kids to be healthy. I mean, this can so enrich you and remind you of what it means to be human when you're truly human. Poetry's done that for me. Poetry also gives me incredible energy. There have been times when I've read a poem that was a delight, and it didn't have to be a comic poem or semi-serious. It could be deadly serious. And I'd read it, and the image would be so powerful. I mean, I had to go out and take a walk to work off some of the energy I would feel from these poems. I remember once picking up a poem in the library. I could take you now right to that place and say, where I was sitting. The poem is called The Avenue Bearing the Initial of Christ into the New World by Galway Connell. It's a long poem. I read it nonstop. I read it a second time, and I thought, this guy's about my age. This must be 40 years ago. This guy's about my age, and he is writing great poetry. So I belong to a generation of poets with unlimited capacity. I mean, that whole day I was like walking on air.
Are there poets today that do that to you?
Yes. The poet Larry Levis, who unfortunately died about 10 years ago, was considerably younger than I, maybe 20 years younger. I don't think there's anybody in the country right now writing as well as he. There's a poet out in California, hardly known, named Joseph Stroud, Stroud. I'm so moved by his poems, which are deceptively simple. There's a poet here in New York City, Tom Slay. He teaches up at Hunter. You read his poetry and you see this incredible possibilities for poetry. He's doing things that weren't quite done before, but he's right there. He's solid. He's within the tradition, but he's using it beautifully. I still thrill at the work of Adrienne Rich. I think she's marvelous. There's a much younger woman named Dorianne Laux, L-A-U-X, who writes poems also centered about, many of them, about work. Great humor in her poetry. And I read a poet the other day named Daisy Freed. She had just a magnificent poem I read in a magazine. I mean, I'm just constantly coming across these people. There's so many options. There's so many, you know, you're just constantly discovering new people.
Is Eminem a poet?
Why argue about it? You know, is Bob Dylan a poet? Yeah, of course he is. I can't answer for Eminem because I never heard him.
Oh, really? Because he's the voice of Detroit now, you know, 8 Mile and...
My brother, my twin brother, who still lives in Detroit, says he's terrific. My brother's smart. He probably is.
And Philip Levine, so that idea that you had as an assembly worker, that worked out pretty well, as it turns out.
Yeah, it was a long process, you know. I mean, when I said I was 20, so it said 63 years ago. Yeah. But, you know, one of the great things about poetry is that it's not an easy undertaking. You give your life to it, and it's a worthy enterprise for a life. That's how it has struck me. And poetry has been incredibly generous to me. So many of my good friends I've met through poetry, partly from teaching and becoming friends with some of my students, but also reading people of my generation who wrote me, or and I wrote them, and we met, and we became dear friends, and they've enriched my life enormously. So I owe an enormous amount to poetry, and I could never really repay it, but I can do my best.
That's Philip Levine, the new Poet Laureate of the United States, speaking to us from the Argo Studios in New York. Phil, thanks so much, and best to you.
Thank you, Robin. Nice talking to you. Be well.